WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. You know who candidates think is the front runner in a race from who gets piled on in a debate. And Tuesday night, that was former Governor Terry McAuliffe, and we have a review of that debate. The board mulling a decision to expand the Middle River Regional Jail puts off that decision while activists and former inmates protest conditions there. And we continue our series on COVID-19 in Virginia's prisons. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, April 7th. The Democratic primary for governor is only 2 months away, and the campaign is heating up. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
In the first televised debate for governor in the Democratic primary, Terry McAuliffe was the only candidate on the stage with the title of former governor, and the one with the biggest target. Former delegate Jennifer Carroll Foy said McAuliffe was not serious about reducing gun violence.
When Terry McAuliffe had the opportunity as governor to be serious about gun violence, he did a backroom deal with the NRA, undermining concealed weapons laws in Virginia, making us all less safe.
Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax said McAuliffe was too quick to call for his resignation.
He treated me like George Floyd. He treated me like Emmett Till. No due process.
Delegate Lee Carter said other candidates on the stage were slow to call for legalizing pot.
I introduced legislation to legalize cannabis in the Commonwealth of Virginia back when even some of the other candidates on this stage asked me, why are you doing this to us in election year?
Senator Jennifer McClellan said McAuliffe could have addressed problems with the parole board.
Governor McAuliffe had an opportunity to put more money in place for the parole board. Unfortunately, he didn't.
The governor's response?
Well, I mean, really?
Voters will get to weigh in on his record and the record of all the other candidates when they head to the polls on June 8th. Michael Pope.
The board that oversees the Middle River Regional Jail near Stanton is considering whether to expand the facility, which has become overcrowded in recent years. But critics say that expanding the jail is not the answer. WMRA's Calvin Pinn reports.
The number of inmates in the Middle River Regional Jail has been more than double its rated capacity every year since 2017, according to the jail's website, and conditions there have allegedly been grim.
My name's Anna Cubbage, and last year I was briefly incarcerated here at the Middle River Regional Jail.
Anna Cubbage, from Bridgewater, described her incarceration as one of the worst experiences of her life.
In that short time, I witnessed violations of human rights, deliberate indifference by staff towards inmates, and I saw numerous mentally ill members of our community struggle in concrete holding cells that were covered in human excrement. Sometimes not even their own, because the cleaning of these cells between inmates is virtually non-existent.
Critics say the answer to the overcrowding is not to build a bigger jail, but to not incarcerate so many people in the first place. That was the message that more than 100 people sent as they stood outside the jail Monday night to protest the expansion in a rally arranged by Virginia Organizing.
There are many, many people that do not belong here. Nobody should be punished for being mentally ill, for having a substance abuse disorder, or for being poor. And that's why we're here.
Some, like Cubbage, gave testimonies about their time at the jail, including DeJuan Bellamy, deputy chairman of the Waynesboro chapter of the Black Panther Party, who was incarcerated there from 2014 to 2015.
I spent 623 days in solitary confinement. I was beaten. I had my wrist broken. I was stripped naked for 15 days in a cell where the temperature was below freezing. I've seen rotten food. I've worked in the kitchen here.
Tracy Stover read a letter from her son, Thomas Stover, who was incarcerated at Middle River last year and is awaiting trial in the Rockingham County Jail for probation violations stemming from earlier drug charges.
Above all, I can't help but wonder what the trajectory of my life could have been had I not been imprisoned for 2 marijuana plants 10 years ago, and had I not been labeled a convict who is beyond helping.
The rally was held ahead of the jail's authority board meeting on Wednesday, where they were expected to vote on whether to move forward with the proposed $40 million expansion, but the vote was delayed. The board's chairman, Stephen King, says it's still too soon to take action.
So we have 5 different jurisdictions, all with different boards and, you know, councils, all with different thoughts and ideas. Some of them wanted to get to the jail and look at the facilities before they made a decision.
Some members of Harrisonburg City Council toured the jail this past weekend, and other local leaders will follow in the coming weeks. Harrisonburg, Stanton, Waynesboro, and Rockingham and Augusta counties all fund the jail, and at least four of the five jurisdictions must approve the proposal for it to move forward.
And so we're just waiting, giving a little more time for that input so that we can let them all have a chance to provide that input to their various city managers and county administrators.
Harrisonburg City Council has opposed the project, arguing that the extra funds that would pay for the expansion would be better invested in the community. According to King, expanding the jail isn't the board's ideal solution either.
I will say that there's not a single member of this Middle River Jail board who wants to do an addition or expansion. We don't want to. And we are all in favor of doing the alternative programs that we can that can reduce numbers, and we're all doing those things. But our reality is what we're having to deal with.
The board could vote on the project at their June 1st meeting, provided the localities have all the information they need. Some local activists say that even if the board votes against expanding the jail, that won't address the systemic issues that led to overcrowding in the first place. DeJuan Bellamy again.
And I think that should be our focus, whether they expand or not, because stopping this expansion isn't going to stop them from bringing me back up 5 years from now. So we have to find a way to eliminate the issue completely.
For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
Learn more about that story on the WMRA app or at WMRA.org, where you'll also find a link to more reporting on this from our news partner, the Harrisonburg Citizen. Now to a follow-up from yesterday's report on COVID-19 in prisons statewide. Because the risk of a deadly outbreak was especially high in state prisons, and because the disease could easily spread to surrounding communities through staff, inmates and employees were among the first Virginians to get vaccines, but nearly a third of prisoners and more than 40% of staff have refused it. That means significant restrictions remain in place, and frustration behind bars is building. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports.
Some prisoners fear complaining to reporters will get them in trouble with the Department of Corrections. At a medium security prison in Chatham, Tim Wright says he's seen inmates transferred to maximum security centers in Southside, Virginia, for speaking out.
When guys stood up about COVID issues here several months ago, they transferred them instantly straight to the mountains. They do not stand for that at all.
Still, he and others were concerned enough to talk with us and to protest. At the Fluvanna Correctional Center, Jennifer Blake joined many other women who refused to return to their cells one night when administrators withheld information, feeding inmates anxiety about COVID.
They came and took two of the ladies out of here. They didn't tell us why. They didn't tell them where they were going. They just came and got them. At one point, they had to confiscate our personal property because they said it could possibly be contaminated. So we were without our clothing and various items. They wouldn't tell us when we were going to get it back.
And Wright says there's little to distract prisoners from their worries.
Vocational programs, GED programs, none of that is happening. It's all on hold.
Visits from the outside are canceled, so are church services, and libraries are closed.
Inmates could no longer access the law library in person. They had to submit their request to the law library for any legal material they needed. But you don't know what case you need, you don't know what rules you're trying to look up until you have access to the research mechanism of LexisNexis.
The medical staff has been stretched to care for COVID patients, and Blake says inmates can't eat in the cafeteria.
We haven't had a hot meal since this started. The kitchen has to send all the meals to the buildings, so by the time they make it to us, they're never hot.
She claims prisoners who want to help prevent the spread of COVID get no cooperation from management.
We have a court order in place that says that we are supposed to disinfect our areas every 2 hours, and they will not give us the supplies to do that. Our unit manager told us that the disposable cleaning cloths are supposed to actually be washed out and used again.
It's frustrating, she says, because no one is keeping watch over prison guards and administrators.
They do what they want. If they agree with it, they do it. If it's a hassle, they don't, and no one enforces it.
Tom Rose echoes that complaint from the River North Correctional Center, where he reports being attacked by a white supremacist.
He was mentally disturbed, to be honest with you, and talking out his mind, he said he hearing voices out of nowhere. He picked up a 55-gallon trash can and threw it at me.
Rose recalls ducking, then tackling the man, at which point he claims three white officers used mace, rubber bullets, handcuffs, and a guard dog to subdue Rose.
I have 40 lacerations on my leg. You know, you're getting the dog thrown on you, or you're getting your behind whipped, or if you go to special housing unit, they'll come by there like they're giving you a tray with nothing in the tray. These are the things that one encounters while they're in here.
When staff reviewed a security video, Rose says they realized he was not the aggressor and apologized. But he's now suing them and the state in federal district court. The pandemic, he says, has made the problems of racism and poor oversight in Virginia prisons even worse. We offered the Department of Corrections a chance to talk about these concerns, but officials did not respond. I'm Sandy Houseman.
The Virginia Department of Health is offering assistance to people who are deaf and hard of hearing, seeking information on COVID-19 and vaccinations. VDH says it recently hired several deaf employees who are fluent in American Sign Language. ASL Help is available daily from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Residents can connect by calling a video phone number or going to the department's webcam on the VDH website, vaccinate.virginia.gov. Full disclosure, the Virginia Department of Health underwrites programming on WMRA. Meanwhile, the Federally Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, will accept applications to help cover funeral costs for Virginians who died from COVID-19. Virginia officials say the aim of FEMA's program is to ease some of the financial stress and burden caused by the pandemic. Assistance is limited to $9,000 per funeral, and a maximum of $35,500 per application. Virginians can apply through a dedicated call center Monday through Friday, beginning Monday, April 12th. The COVID-19 funeral assistance line is 844-684-6333. Many immigrants are now eligible for health care coverage through Medicaid, a rule change from last year's budget, removing a requirement for a 10-year work history, went into effect on April 1st. From Virginia Public Radio, Jad Khalil reports.
The rule change meant that Ruth Alvarez is busy and is going to stay that way for a while.
Oh boy. Yes. Personally, I book until 2 weeks from now.
Alvarez is a healthcare navigator with the Legal Aid Justice Center. She speaks Spanish and helps people apply for Medicaid and health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's marketplace.
This is a big change that is gonna provide the access to health insurance to many immigrants that before they couldn't apply for Medicaid.
The change eliminates what's known as the 40-quarter rule. In order to qualify for Medicaid, immigrants had to have worked for 40 quarters. That's 10 years. Virginia was only one of 6 states with such a requirement. Now, green card holders with 5 years of residency don't need to show proof of work. Since Alvarez started this work in 2015, the eligibility for Medicaid has broadened a lot. 2 years ago, Virginia expanded eligibility to U.S. citizens within certain income limits. Those wishing to apply for health coverage can do so by calling Common Help or visiting commonhelp.virginia.gov. I'm Jad Khalil.
Finally today, the General Assembly consists of part-time lawmakers, and those lawmakers bring their professional experiences to the legislature. That includes some former journalists. Michael Pope, also with Virginia Public Radio, reports.
Former journalists in the Virginia General Assembly are increasing access to public information. Governor Ralph Northam recently signed a bill introduced by Delegate Chris Hurst, a former television news anchor, that would open up police documents in closed cases. Currently, police officials use their discretion to keep those documents secret. But now a new law will provide more transparency.
Being able to look at what officers really wrote in their incident reports as they are describing what happened in an officer-involved shooting. Because if what they say in that incident report isn't matched up by body camera footage or witness testimony, that's really, really important stuff to know.
Delegate Danica Rome is a former newspaper journalist who now represents the community she used to cover. She introduced a bill now being considered by the Freedom of Information Advisory Council to prevent local governments from using fees and charges to block access to information.
FOIA fees are used as a deterrent, and that's the problem.
The Freedom of Information Advisory Council is expected to make a recommendation on that bill in time for the next session of the General Assembly in 2022. Michael Pope.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Wednesday.